Hello, Day Ranger ticket to Lou, please. Our journey begins with a short train ride from the market town of Liscard to the bustling fishing harbour of Lou. We're travelling along the Lou Valley Line, one of the great scenic railways of Devon and Cornwall. The 8¾-mile journey winds through unspoilt countryside and the serene wooded valley of the East Lou River, at times so close to the water that it seems as though we're actually in the river. The track follows the route of the long-disused Liscard to Lou Union Canal, which, like the railway line, was shaped by agriculture and industry. The acid moorland soil of the district required annual improvement with vast amounts of sea sand, seaweed and lime to improve its structure and fertility. Approaching 100 tonnes of limestone were required annually per acre. The canal's steep incline plane of 156 feet over its length was conquered with the installation of 24 locks. When copper deposits were discovered on Corridon Hill and the demand escalated for the silver-grey granite of Bodmin Moor for building works, the canal traffic increased dramatically. But its 24 locks caused the journey to be slow and cumbersome, and plans for a railway to be built alongside were put in place. The authorising Act of Parliament for the Liscard and Lou Railway was granted on the 11th of May 1858. The railway opened 2 years later for goods traffic, with passenger traffic following in 1879, and the canal gradually fell into disrepair and ceased to be navigable. Leaving the train, we head towards the town along the east bank of the River Lou. The town comprises of two communities, divided by the estuary of the river and linked by a road bridge. One of the earliest travel guides, Murray's Handbook for Devon and Cornwall, published in 1859, advises:
Lou is a small place, romantically situated in a deep recess, the acclivities above it being hung with gardens, in which the myrtle, hydrangea and geranium flourish all year round in the open air. It is intersected by narrow lanes, and before the new road was made along the waterside, was approached from the eastward by so steep a hill that travellers were in fear of being precipitated upon the town roofs.
For centuries, until the Industrial Revolution, even main roads in Cornwall were in a primitive condition, little better than muddy cart tracks with no defined edge or hard surface. The main route into Cornwall, from the ferry at Cremel on Plymouth Sound to the port at Foy, ran through Lou. The intrepid explorer Celia Fiennes travelled the route in the year 1698 and documented the journey in her celebrated journal.
From Plymouth, I went to the Cremel ferry, which is a very hazardous passage by reason of three tides meeting. I was at least an hour going over. It was about a mile, but indeed in some places, notwithstanding there were five men rowed, and I set up my own men to row also, I do believe we made not a step of the way for almost a quarter of an hour. But blessed be God, I came safely over. Here I entered into Cornwall. Sometimes I was in lanes full of rows of trees, and then I came down a very steep hill to Lou, and here I crossed a little arm of sea on a bridge of 14 arches, and this is a pretty big seaport, a great many houses of stone, from whence I was to ascend a very stormy, steep hill. I met more enclosed ground and a deeper clay road, which by the rain the night before had made it very dirty and full of water. In many places in the road there are many holes, and when it rains they are filled with water. It's difficult to shun danger. Here my horse was quite down in one of these holes full of water, but by the good hand of God's providence, which has always been with me, ever a present help in time of need, for giving him a good strap, he flounced up again. Though he'd gotten quite his head down and all, yet did retrieve his feet and got clear of the place with me on his back.
Celia Fiennes goes on to write of one of the first records of a Cornish cream tea.
My landlady bought me one of her West Country tarts, the first I've met with. It was the most acceptable entertainment that could be made me. They scored their cream and milk, and so it is a sort of clouted cream, as we call it, and so put it on top of the apple pie.
The medieval bridge over which Celia rode in 1698 crossed the river 100 yards below the current bridge. It was built in the 15th century to link the flourishing boroughs of East and West Lou. Early records depict a bridge of almost 400 feet long and no more than 6 feet wide, built over a span of 15 arches and with a chapel dedicated to St Anne in the middle. The register of Bishop Edmund Stafford, Bishop of Exeter in the 14th century, advises that the penitent faithful could expect an indulgence of 40 days should they contribute towards the cost of the bridge's construction and upkeep. Despite the promise of a remission of temporal punishment for their sins, the local purse strings stayed firmly drawn, and following the Reformation, the chapel was profaned and destroyed. When the old bridge was pulled down in 1853, the only trace of the chapel disappeared forever. A boat ferry runs across the harbour, as it has done since before any bridge spanned the river, and it's a pleasant way to take in the waterside view of both East and West Lowe. For generations, fishing and boat building were the principal occupation, and the town's narrow streets are redolent with its maritime past. In the 18th century, smuggling was endemic in Cornwall, and Lowe provided the perfect environment, the number of turnings and windings and hiding places innumerable. One tale tells of a row of houses with their front doors to the street and their back doors opening onto a passageway leading to the quay. One day, a cobbler, a quiet, hard-working, well-respected man, sat working in the front of his shop when the door suddenly opened and two armed men rushed in. The cobbler neither looked up from his toil nor spoke, but merely nodded at a roll of leather at which he worked. The men pushed their pistols into the roll and rushed out of the back door to the quay. Almost immediately, two excisemen appeared at the front door and demanded to know who were the men who had just entered. The cobbler truthfully answered, "Who were they? I'd never seen them. I wasn't going to waste good daylight on them Mitchin chaps." The revenue men searched the house, but didn't check the roll of leather, and in the evening the cobbler took his usual perambulation along the quay and quietly dropped the weapons into the river. The two smugglers were already on their way to the safe haven of Jersey. It was a commonly held belief amongst the custom officers that even if they did catch the smugglers and prosecute them, no Cornish jury would ever find them guilty. Had the smugglers been apprehended, they would have found themselves at the magistrate's court in the Guildhall on Higher Market Street, now home to the Lowe Museum. The medieval building was, from 1587 to 1868, the East Lowe Town Hall and Magistrate's Court. Beneath its magnificent timber frame roof, the laws were made and administered by the local burgesses, the mayor and corporation. The original ancient cells are to be found in what was the building's fish cellar. The museum provides a fascinating record of the social and economic history of Lowe from the earliest times to the present day, and celebrates some of the local men and women who have shaped the town and its environs, including civil engineer Joseph Thomas. Thomas grew up in nearby Polperro, but by the time of his marriage to his cousin Mary Rowlands at Pellent Church in 1859, had moved to East Lowe. Thomas's famous landmark, the Banjo Pier, was constructed between 1896 and 97 to solve an ongoing problem. The harbour was beginning to silt, and the original groin in the same position but at only 7 feet high was proving dangerous to shipping on a high tide. Thomas proposed to shorten the groin by 20 feet and to use the stone to construct a round on the end of the new pier. The harbour commissioners couldn't agree to support his proposal or the expense of the work, but Thomas was so confident that his plan would work that he wrote, "If the scheme fails to remove the silt, I will pay for the work." His plan worked magnificently, and the commissioners gladly paid in full, though Joseph Thomas waived his professional fee. Originally, the pier was to be named after a naval admiral, but as soon as it was completed, the locals called it the Banjo Pier because of its shape, and the name stuck. Out to sea, St. George's Island lies a mile offshore. According to legend, Joseph of Arimathea landed here with the child Christ, and the remains of an early Christian settlement was excavated in 2008. Today, the island is a nature reserve owned by Cornwall Wildlife Trust. Weather and tide permitting, boat trips can be booked during the summer to visit the island. Many families head to the beach, and the crescent-shaped sandy south-facing East Loo Beach is very popular with visitors and locals alike, especially at low tide, when a large expanse of sand is revealed. During the late summer, the beach becomes the centre of the Loo Music Festival, one of the many festivals held in the town throughout the year. Musician Mark Barnwell has both played the festival and busks in the town during the summer.
If it's a nice day, I do like to go busking in Loo. There's no better place to be. I like to sit on the seafront, looking out to sea, where you get a great view of what's going on the beach. There's people sitting in cafes, and they really enjoy the music all day. It's a great place to busk. I play Spanish guitar, and I play a wide variety of music on the Spanish guitar, everything from flamenco, classical, Latin, Arabic and contemporary music, and a lot of my own material as well. It can be quite lucrative, no pun intended. But I do treat myself to an ice cream or pasty afterwards. I think Loo is probably the first place you come to in the south coast of Cornwall. It's where real Cornwall begins. You've got all the fishing boats and you've got a real feel of you've really, really discovered Cornwall in its true sense.
The South East Cornwall Walking Festival is another of Loo's wide-ranging events. The South West Coast footpath runs through the town, but there are walks aplenty for those wishing to explore the diverse wildlife habitats and flora and fauna of the Loo River valleys. Close to the town, but far from the bustle, Kilmynoth Woods Nature Reserve in West Loo, together with Trenant Woods across the water, forms one of the largest valley oaklands in Cornwall. The area has been continuously wooded since the 15th century, and Kilmynoth is classified as a semi-natural ancient woodland. It's a great place to go walking, its many paths offering fantastic scenic views of the West Loo Valley. At the entrance to the woods, a wooden box can be found which contains plastic-covered maps to a number of suggested routes. I followed a path that rose steeply through the woodland, then clambered over a stile into an open field. The views one way over the bay to the distant Rain Peninsula and the other to Brown William Bodmin Moor were breathtaking. As I followed the well-marked footpath across fields, buzzards wheeled overhead and butterflies flitted to and fro in the hedgerows. The path then descended back down to the riverbank. The woods and river shorelines are a great place to see waders and wildfowl, such as curlew, redshank, shell duck, oyster catchers, heron, and even kingfishers. The ancient woodlands of the Loo River are often referred to as the UK's equivalent of the rainforest, a rare landscape, one that reminds visitors of the Amazon. I took a detour on my way out of Loo to visit another extraordinary location filled with exotic wildlife. I met with Hayley Dan at the Loo Monkey Sanctuary.
The Monkey Sanctuary started very much in the 1960s when the founder, Len Williams, was left a woolly monkey in a will.
Len Williams was a well-known musician and head of the Spanish Guitar Centre in London. But in 1964, he and his family left the city for Cornwall, opening the Monkey Sanctuary in the grounds of Murriton House on the outskirts of Loo.
The main house is called Murriton House, and there's a wealth of history here at the house, all things to do with smuggling, and it's been hotels and a daffodil farm over the years. And I think it was just the charm and idyllic nature of the location that really captured his heart. He realised that there was actually quite a big problem with the primate pet trade. Nowadays, we tend to find it's the same old story that people will get a monkey when it's a baby, when it's young and cute and cuddly. They'll get it as a pet. And then once it reaches maturity, it's at that point people realise they've made a mistake. And that's kind of when we get the call. It's just basically a lack of education and the realisation that this is a wild animal with really complex needs.
So you have a whole range of monkeys here, do you then?
We have three species at the moment, but the capuchins, there's a multitude of species within the capuchin groups. We've got two educational officers here at the sanctuary, and they not only educate here our 30,000 visitors every year, because we're very much an educational experience when you come around the sanctuary, but we do a lot of work outside with schools, so we'll go in and give assemblies and lessons. We work a lot with Oxford Brookes University, Plymouth University, so very much education is one of our key aims. The Monkey Sanctuary just offers a really unique opportunity for visitors to experience what is a very much a working sanctuary. it's got a real charm. I think its location is key, and I mean, on a lovely summer's day, you can look out over the blue Loo Bay, wander around our wildlife gardens. You'll see common lizards, you'll hear many species of birds, see many rare species of butterflies as well. We have the pearl-bordered fritillary here. What I like about the place is that the keepers are out all day giving stories and interacting with the public to tell them about the monkeys and their backgrounds. So it's a really kind of unique experience that you get here.
A Visit to Loo is a South East Cornwall Tourism Association production. It was written and narrated by Emlyn Glenmore-Harris and produced by Dead Interesting Productions.